Part 2. Listening Comprehension. Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear two long conversations. At the end of each conversation, you will hear four questions. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then, mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Conversation 1.
Welcome to Business Matters. Today we have invited career development consultant Lucy Williams to talk about how to get ahead at work. Hi, Lucy. Many of us never seem to get promoted. Why is that, and what can we do about it?
One mistake people make is to limit communication only to their bosses. It's important to expand your network and include your coworkers.
But some of our coworkers are less senior to us. Is it really necessary to connect with them?
It's important not to underestimate your colleagues. Sometimes a job title might not clearly demonstrate the influence they may have.
Now, many of us think that working hard creates a good impression, but this isn't always true, is it?
That's right. We should avoid trying to take on too much work and constantly staying late just to show that you are committed.
I see. So setting expectations too high at the beginning can make us look bad if we don't maintain them.
Yeah, it's better to make sure you are putting in quality time instead of just a large quantity of time. And these efforts can easily be demonstrated by the results we achieve.
What about helping others at work? Should you try and go beyond your normal responsibilities and offer to help people with their projects?
Extend your assistance to those who need it, but only as long as your own work will not go unattended. If someone can benefit from your assistance or advice, help them out to gain their respect and trust.
But it goes without saying that you shouldn't act like a know-it-all, otherwise you'll appear arrogant.
Absolutely. Be humble, and you'll get a lot of time later on to show your genius.
Questions 1 to 4 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 1. What are the speakers mainly talking about? Question 2. What does the woman say is one mistake people make? Question 3. What does the woman advise people to do in their work? Question 4. Why does the man say one should not act like a know-it-all? Conversation 2.
I think we first need to decide how to divide up the presentation responsibilities. From what I recall, the presentation consists of 5 parts, not including the introduction and conclusion. That would mean, altogether, we need to allocate 7 parts between the two of us.
So, we have the abstract, background research, the project design, the results, and the discussion portions. As the abstract section only applies to the article, we needn't include it in the presentation. How would you suggest we dole out the rest?
How do you feel about handling the background bit? In this way, we can both discuss the part of the project that we devoted most of our time to.
Hold on a minute. You want me, the one who did the bulk of the task, to also do the majority of the presentation? The background research, which was so meticulous, took more than a month.
Okay, I get it. Quit your moaning. I appreciate the rigorous work ethic you applied to the research, but not the sarcasm that comes up every time I mention it. What do you think would be a fair arrangement?
I think the best arrangement would be to split the research into 2 parts, before 1980 and afterward. I will take the before portion, and you would be assigned the after 1980, leaving the project and results. I volunteer to describe the project, but as I struggled a bit with the statistics in the results section, how about you handling that?
That's agreeable to me. I propose we both handle the discussion section in parts, along with the question and answer afterward, leaving only the introduction and conclusion.
I will take responsibility for the conclusion and put you in charge of the introduction. This will make it so that we alternate presenting, so as to avoid sounding monotonous to the audience.
Questions 5 to 8 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 5. What does the woman say they first need to do? Question 6. Why does the man refuse to handle the background part? Question 7. What does the woman urge the man to stop doing? Question 8. Why does the man suggest he present the conclusion and the woman do the introduction?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear two passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear three or four questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then, mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. Makeup can do more than just change your appearance. It can also alter others' perceptions of you, for better or for worse. According to new research from the University of Stirling in Scotland, although both men and women perceive women who wear makeup as being of a higher status, men associate makeup with prestigious, positive qualities, while women view other women wearing makeup as being dominant and a potential threat. The research showed that men and women both rated the faces with cosmetics as being more attractive. But only women rated made-up faces as being more dominant, while only men rated made-up faces as being higher in prestige. A follow-up study investigated the root cause behind these differences in perception and found that female-on-female jealousy seemed to be the main cause for the differences in perception. Women rating women with makeup said they would be more jealous of them and thought they would be more attractive to men than their non-makeup-wearing counterparts. Cosmetic products are good for more than just giving you a pretty face. It can be particularly useful for women to understand how wearing makeup alters others' perceptions of them in situations where they are trying to gain others' trust and admiration. At a job interview, knowing whether the hiring committee will consist of men or women might influence a female candidate's decision about wearing makeup. Whether the interviewers will view her as attractive, dominant, and prestigious can affect the interviewer's actions and perhaps the outcome of the interview itself.
Questions 9 to 11 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 9. What can makeup do according to new research from the University of Stirling in Scotland? Question 10. How did both men and women rate the faces with cosmetics in the new research? Question 11. Why does a female candidate need to know the gender of the hiring committee members? Passage 2. You may have seen advertisements trumpeting methods of changing a habit that require absolutely no willpower whatsoever. But can you really change a bad habit or create a good one without willpower? To answer this question, we first have to ask, what is willpower? Most people, sadly, think of it only as the ability to clench their teeth and resist attractive temptations. In this view, willpower means self-denial and no fun. No wonder people hope to make changes without it. I define willpower as using only the thought of your motivators to control your actions. Let's say your motivators are prevent diabetes and reach a healthy weight. So, if you are at the all-you-can-eat buffet, you think about your motivator, avoid diabetes through weight loss, and you take small portions and avoid the dessert table. So, amazingly enough, willpower begins with a thought, a bright idea, some way to improve your life or contribute to others. This bright idea is your motivator. Dr. Walter Mischel, an expert on willpower skills, uses the expressive term a burning goal. Whether you call it a motivator, a burning goal, or a bright idea, this idea is the force behind your willpower. What sort of bright ideas, motivators, make for effective willpower? In fact, any goal that you value strongly counts. The list may include good health, self-respect, a better future for your family, personal mission, and being a role model for your child. All these can certainly drive a positive change.
Questions 12 to 15 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 12. What methods do some advertisements trumpet about changing a habit? Question 13. What does the speaker define willpower as? Question 14. What may sound amazing enough as regards willpower? Question 15. What does the speaker say may make for effective willpower?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear three recordings of lectures or talks, followed by three or four questions. The recordings will be played only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then, mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Recording 1. For many pregnant women, understanding what seafood is safe and healthy and what should be avoided because of mercury concerns comes with a lot of worrying. In part, that's because the federal government's advice on the matter, first issued in 2004, has long been criticized as vague. That guidance has included advice on how much seafood to eat, and which species pregnant and breastfeeding women should avoid over concerns about mercury contamination. But critics say the government advisory has done more harm than good, scaring many pregnant and breastfeeding women away from eating seafood altogether. The problem is real. According to a spokesman for the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA for short, the agency analyzed fish consumption data from more than 1,000 pregnant women in the U.S. and found that 21% of them ate no fish whatsoever in the previous month. And those who did eat fish consumed far less than recommended by the dietary guidelines. Some 50% ate less than 2 ounces a week, and 75% ate less than 4 ounces. This week, the FDA issued an update to the advice, listing more than 60 species in a chart that ranks fish as a best choice, good choice, and choices to avoid. The goal is to make it easier for mothers-to-be to feel confident about the type of seafood they include in their diets. The new advice recommends consumers choose a variety of fish to eat, and it comes with an easy-to-understand illustration of what an appropriate portion size should be. 4 ounces for an adult and 2 ounces for children aged 4 to 7. And while expectant mothers have long been warned to stay away from shark and 4 other particular types of fish from the Gulf of Mexico, now there are 3 new species on the list of what to avoid. But not everyone is thrilled with the new advice. Critics say the new advice doesn't always agree with the agency's own scientific findings. While mercury is of great concern when people are talking about pregnant women and seafood, it's not the only factor contributing to anxiety. The FDA maintains that its final consumption recommendations were based on thorough scientific analysis. Agency spokesman Cassell says the FDA believes the recommendations will increase confidence, not uncertainty. But critics disagree. They think the FDA's advice is not based on the evidence in its own detailed report, and so it confuses everyone.
Questions 16 to 18 are based on the recording you have just heard. Question 16. What does the speaker say about the federal government's advice on seafood safety? Question 17. What did the Food and Drug Administration do this week? Question 18. According to the speaker, what are people concerned about regarding pregnant women and seafood? Recording 2. I know you're busy with work, but you also need to take some time off to recharge those batteries. So, should you plan one big vacation for the year, or should you take multiple short vacations throughout? Quantity can sometimes beat quality. First and foremost, regardless of how you use your vacation days, you need to be using them, and soon. The longer you put off your time off, the worse you're making things for yourself. One 9-year-long study published in Psychosomatic Medicine, suggests not taking at least one vacation a year may increase your risk of mortality due to heart disease. So, not only are you killing your joy, you're possibly killing yourself. Give yourself a break, folks. When you should take those breaks, however, depends on a few factors. How many days you have available to use, what activities bring you joy, whether you have a family or not, and other variables come into play. Because of that, there's no perfect formula that works for everyone. But there are still a few things everyone can try to shoot for. We know that, in terms of maximizing relaxation, you should aim for vacations that range somewhere between 7 and 11 days long. That gives you enough time to let go of your stress at work, completely loosen up, and achieve full-on calm. That above-mentioned study also recommends you space out your vacations evenly, instead of using up all of your days at once. 8 days might sound like a lot for someone who only gets 10 days of vacation a year, but if you frame them with weekends, you can manage 2 evenly spaced 8-day vacations a year. If you have 14 days of paid leave, that's almost 3 separate 8-day vacations you can use to split your year into thirds. As tempting as it might be to use all your days to take one long summer break, your overall goal should be to achieve the perfect balance between length plus joy and frequency. Vacation frequency is important because planning multiple breaks throughout the year means you always have something to look forward to. Planning things, and the anticipation that comes with it, tends to make us happier. If you only take one long vacation every year, the excitement builds much more slowly and seems so far off that it can actually lead to feelings of despair.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the recording you have just heard. Question 19. What does the speaker say about people not taking any vacation? Question 20. What does the 9-year study recommend people do when planning vacations? Question 21. Why is vacation frequency important, according to the speaker? Recording 3. Autonomous cars that can take over from drivers if they are tired or caught in the heat of an argument are being developed in Sweden. Researchers, working as part of the European Union's €77 billion research program, are developing sensor-based systems that monitor whether a driver is distracted, anxious, or tired. If a driver is not in a fit state to be on the road, the car automatically takes control of the wheel to prevent accidents. Dr. Anna Anund from the Swedish National Road and Transport Research Institute, who is leading the project, said a driver's state can be measured using a number of sensors, including heart rate monitors and eye sensors, which track where a driver's gaze is. She said the aim was to really make sure that the transition from the driver to the vehicle is done in a safe way, so we can take into consideration the driver's state, and so we do not give control to a driver who is under pressure of fatigue, stress, anxiety, and so on. According to data from the European Commission, Sweden has the safest roads in the EU, with the UK a close second. However, the number of road accidents in both has largely leveled out since 2010. Driver fatigue is thought to be responsible for as many as a fifth of road crashes across the EU, although there are certain times of the day when more accidents happen. At 6 a.m., for example, drivers are said to be 20 times more likely to have an accident than at 10 a.m. While most experts agree driverless technology should help bring down accident numbers in the long term, some have questioned whether it is safe. The researchers have said the technology they are developing is seeking to bridge the gap between level 3 on the autonomy scale, in which drivers have to be ready to take control of the car at any point, and level 4, in which driving is automated. Daniel Ruiz, the chief executive of the UK's Connected and Autonomous Vehicle Program, Meridian, said, There is a strong debate going on about how it is possible to make a level 3 car completely safe. Despite advances in technology, we still have some way to go in shifting public sentiment. With an increase in attention-grabbing accidents recently, drivers now view self-driving cars as less safe than they used to.
Questions 22 to 25 are based on the recording you have just heard. Question 22. What are researchers doing in Sweden? Question 23. What did the researchers' project aim to do according to Dr. Anna Anund? Question 24. What is thought to be responsible for a fifth of road accidents across the European Union? 25. Why do drivers now view self-driving cars as less safe than they used to?
That's the end of listening comprehension.